Thanks for listening to the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Sponsored by FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com, the leader in single-day fantasy sports contests.
Roto Grinders presents the Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Bringing you up to the minute industry news.
Time for me to tell you about the biggest tournament in the history of daily fantasy sports.
Interviews from the biggest names in the industry.
The one and only Kondia. Head Chopper joins us now to talk about this weekend in daily fantasy football. Now on the podcast, Napster Man.
And game analysis to save you time and help you build your bankroll.
Both the salary and the matchup are just too good. If you are not playing him in your head-to-head game, you are just going to lose.
Here is your host, the one and only, Dan Bock.
Hey everybody, what is going on? Welcome. It is time for another edition here of the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. We are presented to you by our friends over at FanDuel.com. And of course, the single entry series continues over at FanDuel today. And not one, but I believe two, as we've got a nice little early slate going. And as I noticed yesterday, the late slate overlaid a good bit. I think big reason for that is kind of the split action that we had yesterday. So make sure you play in both of these. They only cost a buck. And again, your best entry goes for, or your best four entries of the week move forward. And it's going to be kind of interesting to check out that leaderboard now, where we'll have certain guys' scores kind of dropping off, other people getting new scores to jump up. So now it's going to get interesting. Again, this runs, I believe, all the way through Sunday. And giving away a bunch of extra money. And, of course, first place going to Nashville to play in the finals for their share of $25,000. Also, we need to let you know about our King of the Summer promotion. That continues here. And it's tonight on DraftKings. We've got, I believe it's a $100,000 solo shot tonight. Or, I mean, I'm not sure if it's $100,000 or $10,000. I'll have to check that. But the solo shot tonight, I think it might even be $10,000 because it's single entry. And then, of course, the Firecracker Open for the NASCAR event coming up this weekend on Saturday. So you got to play both of those. And again, we've got a leaderboard attached to that because we like leaderboards. We're competitive here at Roto Grinders. So check that out. $40,000 we're giving away throughout the summer and added value over on DraftKings. So the perks of coming to rotogrinders.com. We'll get into today's show here in just a moment. We got special guest Chris Gimeno is going to join us. He's going to be working on, or is working on, a projection model, but different than just looking at fantasy points. It's a projection model that is going to kind of speculate on ownership, which has certainly become a big deal in the world of tournament play in game theory. So we're going to talk to him about that and break down the slate here in just a moment. But first, I need to get in a little industry news talk, because the forums, I won't say they were quite ablaze yesterday, but a lot of people were looking and talking about the expert designations now on FanDuel. We saw them on DraftKings not that long ago, and yesterday there was a press release or a story on RotoGrinders about it being implemented on FanDuel and beginner games coming along with that. And let's start with the beginner games. That absolutely needs to happen, should happen, and probably should have happened long ago on FanDuel. And it's good that they are going to be offering those. And it'll be interesting to see how they are, you know, how they're presented. Because again, my biggest issue right now for newer players coming in is that, you know, they have really no easy way to match up against people of their kind of skill set in the early going. Again, I don't think we should be parsing out, you know, mid-level players only play mid-level players and expert players only play expert players. That has disaster written all over it. But I do think that, you know, if you can, you know, extend the life of that first deposit for a lot of people, they're going to eventually, when they lose it, like we all do, it's a good chance they're going to come back for more and play again and try to get better at this game, than opposed to putting in their deposit, getting slaughtered by, you know, a top flight expert player off the bat. So I think it's important that newer players have a place to go for their head-to-heads, for their three-man games. I don't know, again, if this rollout is going to have that, or if they're just going to be special designated tournaments, or what. And obviously, tournaments are the easy way to do it. But it's funny, because I think tournament play, there's so much variance in that anyway. You know, I get why we have, beginner tournaments, but I still think the beginner 50-50s and head-to-head games are the better route to go. I mean, it's hard to win a tournament, whether you're a new player or an expert player. So, but any way they can kind of get these new players a better experience, I'm all for. Now, the controversy, which people are talking a good bit about in the forums, is the designations of experienced and highly experienced player. And I kind of ranted about this on the DraftKings version of this podcast a few weeks ago, and they kind of quoted me in the story in RG about it. And I'm just going to kind of reiterate this again, that this is not something that I think FanDuel necessarily wants to do, at least in this way. I think that they want to and realize, like, hey, at this point in time in the industry, we need to, you know, kind of be more transparent about all of our players and their histories and you know, who's successful and who's not. Maybe not who's not, but who is successful. But I don't think that this is very much, this is being, anything good is coming out of, you know, this highly experienced and experienced player designations, because basically what they've done is they've overqualified everyone. And I mean, if you look at it, everyone seems to have a designation next to them. And when you do that, then you've got the true new players being totally exposed with a bullseye on their back saying, pick up my games. Or they look at it and say, wow, everybody who's playing here on FanDuel is a highly experienced player. Why do I even want to play? So I think that it's ridiculous in the way that it's set up. But again, this is something which was devised by regulators in Massachusetts who probably didn't play daily fantasy and didn't know that this was going to happen like this. And now here it is. Now, you know, FanDuel, of course, is coming out like literally 2 days before July the 1st. And July the 1st is the day that they need to be compliant with most of the or with all the Massachusetts regulations. So that's why it's kind of coming out right now. But I did go to New York for the FSTA, and I was lucky enough to kind of beta test some stuff that they have in the works. And one of the things was kind of pertaining to this. And you know, I can't get into the details of it, but I can definitely say that it's a better system than what they kind of rolled out here today. I think what they rolled out here today or yesterday was to be compliant, to say, okay, here we go. We've given you what you want. But from what I tested, it was a much better system, much better setup, much better classifications. And I think it's probably a situation where it's not ready to go, but they have to have something on board right now to meet that expectation of Massachusetts. And that's why they did it. But I'm not sitting here thinking, and same with DraftKings too. You know, I had a chance to talk to some of their guys, and I think that, you know, both of these sites are, I wouldn't say doing the bare minimum, but they're doing the bare minimum right now. And then, you know, as their technology and their dev comes through, they're going to ramp up to better ways to kind of add that element to their site. So I think in the early days, you just got to get something out there. You've got to do what they tell you to, and then you can improve upon that over time. And I think both sites are going to be doing that, because I think they can completely agree at this moment in time, it serves no purpose. And if anything, it makes things worse than better. And I think they know that. They're not stupid, okay? They're not dumb. They've got to look at it and be like, boy, you know what? This is really just exposing the new players and helping them. And I think they're going to find ways to kind of improve upon that. At least I'm optimistic. You know, I don't think we have dumb people running these companies. I think they'll figure this out. And again, hopefully this is just a situation where we need to get on the board. We need to have our stuff ready to go. So Massachusetts says we can operate there. And this is part of the deal. So we'll have to, I hate to say the old wait and see, but let's wait and see. And I'm optimistic that, you know, come football season, we're going to see a lot of new stuff over on FanDuel and DraftKings. You know, Nigel came out in an interview with Yahoo yesterday saying football season is going to look way different. I'm crossing my fingers that includes them getting rid of kickers. I'm not holding my breath on that one, but I would love to see it. But I think we're going to see a lot more, you know, social aspects to the game, both on FanDuel and Jason's alluded to it as well on DraftKings. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens here over the next couple months before we get to football season, which, let's face it, is just a whole nother animal. But let's get to our guest today. He is somebody who is doing a lot more content with us at rotogrinders.com, and he is somebody that I have always, you know, respected tremendously as a player, and was so pumped to kind of see him be able to kind of join the team over here. And it's Chris Gimeno. He joins us here today on the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Chris, welcome to your debut here, man. How are you?
I'm really awesome right now. I'm excited. You know, we got new stuff coming out. You know, we're showing people our new projections on Roto Grinders, and just generally speaking, you know, it's a good time to be playing DFS, some positive news coming out, and couldn't be happier to be here.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you and chat it up. And, you know, let's get to your history as a player. Let's tell me a little bit about how long you've been playing. Are you doing this exclusively now as, you know, your source of income? Tell us a little bit about kind of yourself.
Yeah, so I started playing Daily Fantasy about 3 years ago, but I wasn't really playing full time or even considering it serious at the time. I was big into poker, online poker, back when that was a thing. And when that went away, you know, I had a huge void in my free time. So I started playing season long fantasy sports, specifically fantasy football. I'd never really played basketball or baseball. Once I caught the itch, so to speak, you know, Daily Fantasy just intrigued me to the point where, you know, about a year and 9 months ago or so, I started really digging in deep. And since that time, I've just basically improved every single day just by listening to shows like this, you know, researching what it takes, you know, teaching myself to fish, so to speak. And it's resulted in some good things, including, you know, some money won, some live finals, and some interesting ways to add my perspective on Daily Fantasy as a content producer.
Yeah, and you grind a lot of different sports, don't you?
I've done very well in basketball. My bread and butter is the NFL. I love the NFL as a sport for DFS and just as in general, my favorite sport. And I also recently have taught myself the ins and outs of Major League Baseball and feel really good about where I am there too.
I've seen you play NASCAR. Don't lie. I've seen you play. I think we tweeted back a few times where we had identical lineups and we're like, great minds think alike, or maybe just the salaries just ended up that way. I don't know.
But it's hard. It's hard to stay away from these big contests when they're out there. So I dabble in golf too, you know, but the three sports I mentioned are definitely where I prefer to spend my time.
And big sweat for you 2 days ago over there on DraftKings. You know, it's always the, oh, what could have been. And it's funny because, you know, I'm old and go to sleep. And when I went to sleep, you had 100K sitting, you know, in your projected winnings on, I think it was the three-man $1,500 tournament there. And then I woke up and saw 14 runs or, no, 20 runs, whatever it was in Coors Field. And I said to myself, pretty sure Chris probably didn't hold on to that one because that was that late Coors Field night. But had to feel good for a while to kind of see that sitting there.
I know better by now than to get excited about the winning number. So I know that you're an underdog at that point when Coors Field is on the slate and you've got the Blue Jays in town. But it was nice to still have a nice finish in that tournament and, you know, really, you know, against what should be probably the best players in the world show up pretty well.
Where do you fall in the multi-entry versus like the capped entries? I know that was a three-man max tournament. Is that a preference of yours? Does it not matter? Are you one that, you know, likes to do the mass multi-entry? Where do you fall on that spectrum?
I'm okay with multi-entry. I think that there should be some limitations on how much you can multi-enter. You know, when you put out a limit of 500, I think that's going a little bit too far. But I don't mind the ability to multi-enter. I like doing it myself and had some success with that. But I also very much like doing a limited entry or single entry. I think I'm in sixth right now on the leaderboard for that single entry series. Ooh. On FanDuel. So apparently I'm okay with that too.
Well, still got to grind your way the rest of the week. Should be a fun tournament there. Well, let's get into what you're doing because I really think that, you know, one of the big themes that we've seen in terms of people who use game theory and people who are, you know, trying to win tournaments and is the element of ownership projection. And, you know, for some sports, like for football on FanDuel, we get a little bit of a guide, you know, Thursday comes out and then we get a whole group of numbers to look at, you know, from the tournaments, from the people who entered those tournaments. So there's ways to get ownership on FanDuel for NFL. But outside of that, unless there's maybe a split slate, it's a little bit difficult. But we know it's important because, again, if you can get exposure to somebody who's going to be 1% or 2% owned and brings big potential upside, that obviously can differentiate you from the field. So what do we have you kind of working on here exactly pertaining to that? Because I think it's something that is great and probably something that's long overdue.
Yeah, so it's really tough to visualize in your head what the whole landscape of the slate looks like from a hitter perspective and a pitcher perspective as far as ownership's concerned. It's pretty easy to say, oh, I think this guy will be low owned or I think this guy will be high owned. But you put a percent on one guy, what does it mean the percent of another guy is if you think this guy is going to be X percent? So what we thought would be a great idea is if we posted a projection for every player on, you know, one slate a day on each site so that people could go in, look and say, okay, well, here's what the whole landscape looks like from a projection standpoint, and really start to try to, you know, make decisions on their GPP rosters based on what our projection is on ownership.
So exactly how are we coming up with these percentages? Is this done via a model? Is it done by hand? Is it reworked with a little bit of both? Kind of give us a little bit of the insight in terms of how we come up with these projections, projected ownership numbers.
It's definitely a little bit of both. You know, it's not that far away from a projection model that you would see normally to put out a fantasy point projection, but I had to build in some, you know, some logic and some things that could kind of mimic how people would make decisions when they're selecting a player at a particular position. So it's segmented, you know, catcher, first base, second base, pitcher, and really tries to mimic the idea that, okay, well, if I'm paying a certain amount for one spot, am I going to have to pay less or more for other spots if I do that? And it really, it's not perfect. So there's definitely some things to be done by hand after the model runs. But there's definitely, a little bit of both when it comes to projecting projections on a daily basis.
Yeah, I almost think, too, that you almost have to, you have to do a little tinkering because, you know, I think a lot of the times there's a groupthink that goes into daily fantasy where you get a lot of the touts, you get a lot of the people kind of talking about the same group of players, and naturally you're going to see a lot of people kind of flock to those players where, I don't know if a model is going to recognize that necessarily. So, I think it's going to be interesting to monitor. I mean, is this obviously something that you've – have you been working on it for a while, or are you still like in the beginning stages of it, work tinkering with it? Like, where are we, and like, how close has it been? You know, how has it been working for you so far in terms of, you know, because obviously the best, you know, model you want to try and get it to the closest expectations of the actual result. So how are we doing on that?
So we've been working on it for quite a while. We started earlier this year taking a look at what it would take to try to build a, you know, spreadsheet and make it accurate. We think we can get better with it. We think that more information is going to be better as it relates to, you know, what metrics kind of correlate and link up well with ownership. And then what else do we need to factor in that's not quantifiable, that's not a metric, so that we can really on a day-to-day basis get it right. But it's worked pretty well. You know, I think that the model struggles with the idea that ownership doesn't really exist the way it's going to exist till very late in the process, you know, leading up to lineup lock. People are making their decisions and formulating what they're going to be doing, you know, minutes before lock. And just to give you an example, like there was a late scratch at catcher yesterday. The model thought McCann was going to be higher owned than he was, but a later addition to the lineups in Deonner Navarro kind of pushed him down a little bit, and there were some other changes to the slate that really made it, you know, less enticing to take McCann as much as the model wanted him to.
Yeah, and obviously you've got weather factors that can get into it as well for baseball, and it's funny too because sometimes like a scratch or a late lineup coming in, it just doesn't even affect those guys if somebody isn't out there. But sometimes it opens up. Let's say we're waiting on a late lineup, and then you got a 2K player, a 2200 player leading off in one of those late games. Well, suddenly they can become a preeminent value play. And not only does that, you know, kind of take away from, you know, maybe a different value plays ownership, but also can increase the higher price guys, because, you know, there's usually a path to roster builds a lot of time. And I think it's interesting to kind of see how this – I mean, I'm supposing you have to run it after every lineup comes out. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, we're still perfecting the update process, and that's where I say we'll definitely get better as this goes along. But clearly, you know, in order to, you know, get it closer to what the actual expectation will be, you have to update it as it leads up to lock. And that's just going to be a challenge to go forward to make sure that we're doing that in the most efficient way possible.
All right. Well, let's where are we on this right now? I think I don't know. I'll have to talk to the guys. I probably should have brought this up ahead of time, but whatever. I think it's going to be a premium add-on to our projections. Is that correct?
Yep. So premium subscribers will be able to see it in the projections page as its own column, the P own percent column or pwned percent column. And it's going to be right next to the expert consensus rankings and some other great information on the projections page. So you could really use that to drill down and find good plays who could potentially have lower ownership.
Yeah, I definitely saw it. I think Cameron linked it out the other day, and I was like, oh, this is sweet. Man, those projection pages are about as good as I have ever seen them here. I mean, certainly have gotten a lot better in terms of all the information in one place. And right now, you know, the actual projections are free, but, you know, these add-ons are going to be well worth it, especially, you know, as we get better and better in terms of trying to get those projections. And it'll be fun to kind of match up and see how they do day to day, week to week, especially for NFL, because I think ownership, you know, especially when you've got, you know, a game like NFL and even NBA to a point, but NFL is kind of a good mix where you have some variance, but there is some predictability. You know, baseball has a lot of variance. Basketball has a ton of predictability. But I think football kind of hits that sweet spot of the big three in terms of a fair amount of both. And I think that's why, you know, projected ownership, maybe in NFL, I think that could be one of the most I think that could be the most useful sport for it. What's your take on that? What do you think?
Absolutely. It's also going to be one of the more difficult ones to project just because, you know, the metrics aren't necessarily going to be as heavily weighed in some cases as they would in other sports. So I'll be interested to figure out, you know, what we're going to come up with when it comes to projecting the NFL. But by and large, it's going to be something I'm excited to do and excited to work with some others on as we move forward here with NFL.
Cool. Awesome. Well, let's get to tonight's slate. It's a quick seven gamer, and we're going to just give you our thoughts on it as you know, you get ready to build your lineups here on this Thursday night. The way we usually do it is we take pitching on its own, and then we go game by game and go through some hitters. And again, we're just going to look at the late slate of games tonight as Stevie usually gets us covered there on the early slate. What are we thinking here at starting pitcher? I mean, you look at the top options. You got Bumgarner at 1,200, Carrasco at 10-1 over on FanDuel today. Those are kind of your top price guys. And, you know, obviously in FanDuel, a site that the win is so important, you know, it makes all the sense in the world to look for a guy who's a heavy favorite and not much heavier favorite out there. Well, I guess Bumgarner, I was expecting him to be able to, like, minus 200 today against Oakland, but only minus 159. Is that good enough, though, for you to spend 12K on the guy tonight?
I'm not sure. I think that there's some merit to not using Bumgarner tonight. I think that there's some other options that are cheaper that we could look to that may be able to get you some of the bats you're desiring, and Bumgarner's upside isn't necessarily huge against the Oakland Athletics. So for me, I think that you have a tough choice to make here as to whether or not you want to roll with Bumgarner, who's clearly the top option on the slate from a skill perspective, but maybe not from a point per dollar perspective.
Yeah, I think it's going to kind of see how the roster build is going to go. I still think he's fine, but did you see what they're doing with him today where they're not using a DH and they're actually going to let him hit?
That's pretty awesome, first of all. And I hope they let him in the home run derby too. I really would like to see something interesting like that happen, you know, just to keep it fresh. But yeah, I don't mind it. You know, he's not a terrible hitter. We've seen him go yard on, I think, Kershaw before. So, you know, I'm really excited to see if he can actually get it done here today against Dylan Overton.
Yeah, and I think that the, you know, the bottom of that order there for the Giants, like, they don't have, like, don't have that necessary big kind of DH bat anyway that that stands out. So why not? And hopefully it actually kind of pays off for him. It'll be interesting to see. But he's obviously the top price guy today. I'm fine with him. you know, on the road. Oakland, I think they're starting to hit the ball a little bit better. I think it'll be interesting to see if Davis is in the lineup. He was a late scratch yesterday, and, you know, you take him out of the lineup, and I think, you know, he obviously has a lot of punch, certainly versus lefties. But overall, you know, that lineup, you know, not just totally enamored there with Oakland. But FanDuel definitely, as I talked about earlier this week, has their kind of dynamic pricing going on with the top-end pitchers. And you look at the Oakland bats, they're all like $2,500 or less, or it looks like $2,700 would be the highest. So they definitely put the algorithm to use today on bats versus Madison Bumgarner. Other options for us here at starting pitching. Carrasco, you know, he's going in a tough environment here on the road against the Blue Jays. Probably not a top target for me. The guy who's actually the biggest favorite on the day is Gio Gonzalez against Cincinnati at almost minus 200. But here's a guy who's had 16 fantasy points combined over his last two starts. But, you know, they get a Cincinnati team, which, you know, Brandon Finnegan leaves a lot to be desired. And that bullpen, more than anything, is just absolutely horrid out there for Cincinnati. Do you trust Gio at all tonight?
If I trust him, it's because I think he has a good chance to get a win if he can actually last 5.5 innings. But certainly we've seen the Reds come through with some big outputs recently, and there's some good hitters on that team. That doesn't necessarily make me overjoyed to use Gio. But again, at 8,500 with a really high expectation for a win, he's definitely one of the top options to look at, and I don't hate it. I think I'll probably look to stay clear in cash games if I play on FanDuel, but I don't think it's a bad idea to use Gio, and he is definitely one of the top options.
Anybody else standing out? Because it's a tough slate today. You know, Odorizzi and Zimmerman, those two guys have kind of had up and down seasons this year. Mattson Lackey, very low total at only 7.5 there, which is, you know, kind of unusual there for the Cubs. But again, no kind of big favorite there. And both those guys, you know, kind of they're good, but they certainly aren't, you know, studs by any stretch of the imagination. And then Chris Tillman out there, maybe against Seattle. Again, tough to get on him on FanDuel at that price tag with, you know, he's just what, minus 104, pretty much a pick 'em between those two. But he's actually looked a little bit better this season as well. Anybody, you know, where are you going with pitching? I guess that's the question, because I'm struggling myself. I'll probably just bail out and go the Mad Bum way myself.
I hope I don't get thrown off the podcast forever for suggesting that Wei-Yin Chen could be a good option tonight against the Atlanta Braves, but they really struggle against really all types of pitchers. And I think that the run total in that game will be on the lower side. And I think that Chen has a great opportunity for a win here today against Foltynewicz. So I don't think Wei-Yin Chen's a bad option for cash games, maybe better for tournaments though.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be curious to see what lineup they roll out. I know our projected lineup has them going lefty, 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 righty, lefty, righty, righty, split. So, you know, left side, what, four of the top five spots, which would be an advantage to Chen for sure. But he's another guy. Like, man, he can be really good one day, and then the next start, the wheels fall off. But, you know, who's going to really hit him up there on Atlanta? You know, outside of Freeman and lefty matchup, that team is just terrible. So 8,400, not a gimme price tag on FanDuel by any stretch, but maybe a guy to keep your eye on. All right, let's go to a game by game, kind of look at some hitters here. And we'll start with Cincinnati and Washington. Again, this one with a pretty high total at 9, a run expectation of 5.33 for the Nats. And their bats starting to wake up a little bit. Daniel Murphy with 2 home runs yesterday. Bryce Harper starting to wake up a little bit at the plate as well. And Finnegan, a guy who can be had. So, obviously, Gio, you know, he's a strong favorite here. The Reds bats, I don't love them necessarily today. But what's your read on this game in terms of your top targets?
Well, I think the Nationals bats project as some of the best bats on the slate. You know, they have a high run total with 5.3 runs. And, you know, my projection model, without doing too much tinkering, actually likes them to be pretty highly owned so far. So I think that the Nationals are, especially the top of the order, are definitely a place to start looking at this game.
Yeah, we'll be interested to see if we get a Michael Taylor leading off. You know, he usually is in there versus lefties instead of Revere. And then we're paying a pretty high price tag on Worth at 4K. Harper, Murphy, 4.2. Murphy at 3.9. And never sleep on Wilson Ramos, the perennially overlooked catcher. You got to pay a pretty number on him today. It looks like at 3.8 on FanDuel, but again, probably going to drag down that ownership because people don't usually like to take catchers. The one guy over there on the Reds who I'd maybe throw some consideration to could be Suarez over there at third base. He's a guy with much better splits versus lefties, and you know, Gio, let's face it, you know, he's not a shutdown Max Scherzer, Strasburg type. He can get hit around a good bit, so he's probably my lone target for the Reds today. Anyone on the Reds besides him you like?
You could look at Cozart leading off for 3,200. I don't think that that's a bad play. I think that Gio has definitely shown us that he has the ability to get touched up, and Cozart is someone who very recently has shown that he's got some pretty big upside.
Moving on to the Indians and the Blue Jays here today. Where do you fall in terms of team BVP? Because I'm trying to bring some up here for R.A. Dickey and the Cleveland Indians. Are you in favor of using it or just totally useless?
I'm neutral in general. I think I'm more towards the side of I don't really consider it that heavily. But when it comes to specifically R.A. Dickey, I think it's fine to look at the history against him just because he's a very specific type of pitcher, and the results that you would have had against him, they probably would be translatable more so in a small sample than others would be.
Yeah, and looking at him, we got Napoli 7 for 24 with a home run, Rajay Davis 5 for 11. Let's see, Carlos Santana only 2 for 14 in his career, so not a huge sample size on too many of these guys, but it looks like Napoli and Davis, probably the best BVP plays of the bunch. But, you know, out there in Rodgers, again, this is a pretty even line. The Indians have been red hot lately with their bats, so they're, you know, certainly a little bit more interesting, and it's kind of crazy. I'm almost wondering if, like, BVP is now in the algorithm on DraftKings, because I don't get why Mike Napoli's 4K versus him.
I mean,
I don't get it. Like, that seems crazy.
The DraftKings algorithm is definitely smarter than I am, so I'm not going to question it too hard on this Napoli pricing because sometimes he's a lot lower than I think he will be, and sometimes he ends up being egregiously highly priced. But today against Dickey, I don't mind the 4K price. I think that's a pretty good line on him. I think he's got a pretty nice prospect of success here, and I'll consider using him, although I'd probably rather use Carlos Santana if he's in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, it's just, this is the FanDuel one, and it's like, I just haven't, since they made some tinkers to it, I'm trying to figure out exactly what they're using to come up with these things. So that one just kind of threw me off a little bit. Santana's really pricey at 4.6 today. I'm guessing he might even be the most expensive first baseman. Yes, he is by a large margin here today on the slate at 4,600. So again, I think Bumgarner's probably going to be chalk today, and you're probably going to be able to get Santana and Napoli pretty low owned today just based on are they going to want to, you know, if you've got one spot to spend up, are those the guys you want to spend up on? And I think more times than not, the answer is going to be no to that to the general public.
I agree with that. And again, I think when I say I want to play Santana more than Napoli, it's for those reasons exactly. I think that he's been crushing lately. I think that he's a really, really, really interesting option for tournaments.
And then a few other options down there, boy, even some of the punt guys like Tyler Naquin is 3,800 on FanDuel. So they don't think too highly of Mr. Dickey today in terms of their algorithm. And then on the Blue Jays side of things, you know, they're coming from Coors. So, I actually expected them to be a little bit more juiced up than they are. Devin Travis, who hit the ball really well in Coors Field, only 2,900. We'll see where he bats in this lineup. Donaldson and Encarnacion, they're fairly moderately priced by, you know, their recent performance at 4K and 3,900, always kind of options at home. But, I mean, Carrasco's a guy who he's not really somebody that we look to kind of pick on all that much. His K numbers, you know, coming off maybe his best start of the season there, going a complete game, 7 strikeouts versus Detroit that last time out. But he's been good. Not dominant as of late. He's had a couple of games where he gave up 9 hits and 10 hits. What do you think of Toronto today?
If you're using Toronto, it's definitely a tournament situation. Carrasco's, you know, got them priced down for good reason. He's a strong pitcher, although he's not immune to getting hit pretty hard. So I don't think it's impossible that the Blue Jays can end up being a strong tournament play. But for me, I wouldn't really want to rely on the Blue Jays against Carrasco.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Chen and Foltynewicz, I think I screw up that name, but whatever. Folty. And no line on this one this morning. And, you know, this is a game which is kind of interesting here. I'll be curious to see what number it checks in at. What would you guess? 8, maybe?
That's pretty close to where I'd have it. Yeah, 8 runs would be a pretty solid line. I think that Chen will be favored, but he won't be a massive favorite.
Now, Folty's had, you know, he throws the ball hard. He throws it really hard. But I don't know if he's got a lot of movement on his pitches because he gets knocked around a good bit. And, you know, it makes you wonder, a guy like Christian Yelich, Justin Bour, a couple of lefties here, that's kind of been the some of the struggles for, I believe, Foltynewicz to this point in his career. So those are a couple of guys I'm looking at. Yeah, look at the lefty splits here. On our projections page, 441 WOBA for lefties versus Folty, a 328 ISO, and the K per 9, 7.65. So I think any of those lefty bats for Miami got to be in play today. I don't know about Ichiro, but Dietrich, Yelich, Bohr, sign me up for those guys.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially Dietrich if he's batting high in the order. We'll pay attention to lineups for that information, but overall I think you nailed it.
And as for Chen, he's pretty tough versus lefties here. The WOBA at 264, 366 for righties. So you might even make a better argument here for him if that lineup comes out as lefty heavy as it often is there for Atlanta. But we can't in good conscience recommend too many Braves here to you. Let's go to Detroit and the Rays. Again, this game sitting at an 8. Pretty even line, Odorizzi and Zimmerman. It's tough to know, you know, what we're going to get from these pitchers here. I think both of them have a ton of talent, but we've also seen them get ripped. I mean, this last game you had Zimmerman get a -1. Then he had 2 decent starts and then had a 2. And same with Odorizzi. He's kind of all over the board. Sometimes he's, you know, putting together mid-40s. His last start versus Baltimore was 3. So that kind of uncertainty kind of makes me nervous, obviously, to use any of these guys, but also, you know, it's hard to kind of project bats against them. I will say Detroit seems to have woken up a little bit here over the last month of the season with their bats. So I think if I'm picking a side today, I think it's probably Detroit for me over the Rays. What do you think? And it's close, though.
Yeah, the Rays are so binary. They're either hitting home runs and going off or just striking out the entire game. And against Jordan Zimmerman, who's not a really high strikeout pitcher, I think they have some potential to do well today, but I'm with you that I like the Tigers better.
And some of the you know, nice prices on the Tigers here today. I don't know if they thought that someone else was pitching, because you've got Miggy at 3.6, Martinez at 3.2. I mean, Miggy at 3.6 and Justin Upton at 3K. I don't know what's up with that salary there. Hey, I'll tell you what, if your projection model does not think there's going to be high ownership on Detroit, you better bump it up a little bit, because I think Miggy at 3.6 and even Martinez at 3.2, they're going to be sexy plays for a lot of DFS players today, I think.
Yeah, fortunately, the model is favoring the Tigers quite a bit here without doing any adjustments to it. And when you look at Miggy from a splits perspective versus Odorizzi from a splits perspective, Odorizzi generally exhibit some reverse splits, as does Miggy. So I think I like that spot quite a bit.
Yeah. Steven Moya, he's obviously starting to swing the bat a little bit better with some power at 3K. Hits at the bottom of the order. It's tough to use him in cash games at that price point, but in a stack, I'm fine with it. Maybe you're a value option. I always think James McCann always flies under the radar a little bit. Nobody likes to roster that guy. I think he's a decent little hitter. So don't mind him at 2.5. On the Rays side of things, I think we prefer Forsyth versus lefties, but I do really like Brad Miller when he bats in that two hole. Shortstop could be a, you know, position that's tough to roster some days. And he's not a gimme price today. I love him when he's at that 2.8 number, but 3.3, he's been pretty solid in that role this season. So I don't mind him. Anyone else? Desmond Jennings at 2.5? I don't know. What do you think?
Don't sleep on Evan Longoria. I mentioned Zimmerman doesn't have really great strikeout stuff, and Longoria has just been hitting the crap out of the ball against right-handed pitching this year. I really think that he's a strong play at 3,400 for tournaments.
And Team BVP going to be on Logan Morrison today, 4 for 23 home runs against Jordan Zimmerman in his career. So there you go. Moving on, Cubs and Mets today, low total, Lackey and Mats, but we're not getting too much of a discount on too many of the Cubs bats here today. Bryant and Rizzo still over 4K. Zobrist at 3.8. He has been a lefty masher most of his career. Kind of been off a little bit over the last month or so. I think picked it up in the last week or so. But what do we like on the Cubs here price-wise? I have to say Javier Baez, he bailed me out the other day at that Grand Slam. I was really tilting all game long because every other shortstop was going off. And then lo and behold, in like the 14th inning, he hits a Grand Slam. That was nice. Like it when that happens.
That was nice for those of you who rostered him. I didn't have too much buys that day, so it was disappointing for me personally. But, you know, when you look at him at 2,900, I think that's absolutely fine. You know, Matt's, we're not sure exactly what his health status is right now. So I don't think Baez is too bad of a play at all at 2,900.
Yeah, Matt's you know, pretty solid, both lefty, righty. If you look at the WOBA splits for him, 295 lefties, 302 versus righties. But he's tough to really use because we don't know the health of him. And but I will say it's weird to see a Cubs total down in the 7.5 range. You know, I know it's the Mets, but that seems sneaky low. I would have projected it at least probably 8 here today. So, you know, maybe it still gets there when it's all said and done. On the Mets side of things, you know, John Lackey has really been much better than I think any of us expected. The question is it for real? Like, or are we going to see John Lackey start to regress like we did in his last start versus Miami, where he didn't go 5 innings and only got 7 fantasy points? Thoughts on him tonight?
I think the Mets lineup has been pretty terrible lately. And, you know, Lackey, while it's probably likely that his strikeout rate will regress at some point in time, I think that he's really one of the finer options tonight, given what I think about the Mets at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets aren't swinging the bats particularly well. I don't think I'm trust Lackey enough to use him, but I also am not looking at too many Mets bats there that's standing out to me. Nothing standing out in the BVP department, really, for the Mets against Lackey either. So if I was going to take a shot on somebody, it might be a Cespedes in a tournament just because he has, you know, 2 home run upside. But, I mean, the bottom of that order is awful. It's Loney, Flores, Nimmo, Darno, and then the pitcher spot. So, you know, Darno, 2.2, he can do worse than him, but batting 8th, probably not a top target of mine. But, you know, that bottom of the order, pretty ugly for the Mets. All right, a couple more games to go. Royals, Cardinals. I think the Cardinals today, one of my favorite teams out there. And, you know, I have my biases. There are guys that pitchers that I love to stack against. And Chris Young is one of those, especially with left-handers. And lo and behold, we've get the Cardinals here today who could roll out a handful of these guys. Carpenter is obviously going to be in the lineup. Either Moss or Adams are going to be in the lineup today. Both of them make fine plays. And then Colton Wong, I believe, was called up from the minor leagues. If he's batting, you know, wherever he's in the order, he's 2.8K today, another left-hander. So I don't mind the Cardinals at all today. You don't see them with a run line, expected run line of 5 all that often. So I think Chris Young gets lit up here today. I'd say Cardinals, favorite stack for me.
I think that's a good take. I think that the more Matt Carpenter you can get, the better. I think that Chris Young is finally seeing some of those fly balls that were only getting to the warning track last year go out of the park. And he's had some real problems with home runs this year. And there's some good power on the Cardinals lineup, particularly, you know, in the middle of that order. I don't think there's any reason not to be loading up on Cardinals tonight.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll be seeing interesting, you know, you see Moss at 3,900, Matt Adams at 3,700 today. So those guys definitely juiced up here against St. Louis. We'll see if Diaz is in the lineup today. He did set out yesterday and actually was wearing catcher's gear in the dugout, which I thought was kind of funny. If he's out again, if Jerko gets in there, he's always kind of a high upside 2K crapper. Potentially for you. Giants and A's, Mad Bum versus Dylan Overton. You got a book on Dylan Overton? Because I don't.
Yeah, I don't have much of a book on him, but I will say that he fared okay in his last start. He doesn't look like someone who's going to be generating a ton of strikeouts, and the Giants' offense is definitely not someone I'm looking to pick on with most pitchers, especially not young pitchers. So I'm going to be staying away from him for the most part, unless I get some information that I don't currently have that tells me he's, you know, somehow a good play against a pretty strong Giants offense.
Yeah, I think that the Giants set up better versus versus righties than they do lefties. But, you know, I'm all right with him or with some of the Giants bats today. Clearly, Posey elite versus lefties at 4.3 is not coming cheap. And I don't hate Brandon Crawford. He's another guy who kind of splits indifferent with him just because he's a lefty. He's fine versus left-handed pitching at 3.4K. If Trevor Brown is in the lineup today, he's only 2.1. We saw him in the lineup the other day. Keep your eye on that. So you got value at the bottom because you got Brown at 2.1, Mac Williamson at 2.2, Ramiro Pena at 2.2, Tejada at 2K, but not a whole lot of savings elsewhere. I guess Pagan potentially at 2.8 near the top. But outside of Posey and maybe Crawford, not a whole lot of guys I'm looking at. And then for Oakland, same thing that we saw with the Reds the other day against Jake Arrieta. You know, I mean, this is a team where if you need a 2K option late and you're not using Bumgarner as your starting pitcher, you could do worse than, you know, throw in a Danny Valencia in at, 2.7 or maybe even a Fagley at 2.5. But outside of that last throw in, you know, it just doesn't make sense to take bats against Madison Bumgarner.
I won't start off my time here on the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix podcast by telling you to take advantage of hitters against Madison Bumgarner. So I'm with you there. One-offs only. You know, I'm staying away from Bumgarner. He's a really good pitcher.
Yeah, we don't. That's a little too hot of a take for this podcast, no doubt. Lastly, Orioles, Mariners. Again, this one sneaky high total here, 8.5. You know, not that Tillman and Taijuan Walker are ace pitchers, but for that ballpark, I usually kind of set the standard at about 7.5 to 8. And then when it gets above that, it kind of raised my eyebrows. We saw that yesterday, and it was Pittsburgh who, put up a big number against Wade Miley. What's your take in this game?
I think my take in this game is that Chris Tillman has vastly improved this year, and I would much rather take Orioles bats than Mariners bats, although the Mariners have shown the propensity this year to really get it going, even in their home ballpark. So I'm not necessarily going to be loading up on Tillman either.
Yeah, this is tough. That lefty heavy lineup there against Tillman here today, but I think, let me see real quick on the splits for him. Pretty indifferent. Probably a little bit bigger power for righties against Tillman than lefties if you look at the ISO numbers. But pretty splits indifferent there. But, this lineup with, Martin, Seth, Smith, Cano, Seager, you're going lefty, four of the top five spots. You know, Cruz, obviously a big bat. Be interesting to kind of see how this game goes. And then the Orioles bats have kind of woken up as well. Definitely some BVP here in Robinson Cano's corner. 14 for 34, two home runs in his career going against Chris Tillman. So, you know, his price tag today sitting at about 4.1 on FanDuel. And then Taijuan Walker, what's your feelings, bats against him wise?
Yeah, I think it's probably better for tournaments if we're talking about going against Walker. We've seen him have some really mixed results this year. He's had some really bad games and some really outstanding games. And I think the Orioles are one of those teams where it could also go either way. They could get it going with the home runs as they have been lately, and you could be very sorry that you started Taijuan Walker, or they could go more towards their tendency to strike out. With a right-handed pitcher on the hill here, you know, there's not a ton of left-handed options on the Orioles that are really scaring me. So there could also be some chance that you could use Taijuan Walker for some upside tonight against the Orioles.
A little bit better numbers actually for righties against Walker, looking at the WOBA splits there. So I don't think we need to worry too much about that. I'll be curious to see how this lineup comes out. If Young-Soo Kim, you know, he's been a pretty fun guy to roster when he's near the top of the order. He's always cheap under 3K. But Jonathan Scope, big game for him the other day, swinging a hot bat. He is priced up mega high today at 3.8. Like, man, I just not used to this FanDuel algorithm. I just haven't quite figured out what's going on with it because, you know, you've got these anomalies like Jonathan Scope at 3,800. I mean, he's been hot, don't get me wrong. And now when you look at his game log, I probably, you know, he should probably be 3,800. 28, 28, 24, 15, 18, 12, 34. Those are a bunch of over the last 10 games. So I guess he's been worth it lately, but it's hard for me to use Jonathan Scope over like a Robinson Cano tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Scope definitely has power, and he's definitely someone who, if he was cheaper, you might consider, but there's just no way I'm going to pay $3,800 at second base when I have Matt Carpenter to look forward to at 46 if I'm trying to pay up.
All right, that is the quick look today at what we got going on at FanDuel here tonight for your daily fantasy baseball. So good luck in all your matchups, and that's going to pretty much wrap up the podcast for us today. Chris, thanks so much for jumping on. We'll be keeping our eye out again once the ownership numbers. Again, you're going to be able to find them in our projections over there on rotogrinders.com. And good debut, man. Appreciate it much.
All right, thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and certainly check out Grinders Live here today as we're going to be bringing you three shows, including, I believe, Rotonomics tonight gets rolling at 3:30. That's always a fun one with JM to win and Mr. Cheese is good. I know Britt actually had a water heater leak, so he is out for today, but you'll get Hoop 24/10 at 4:30 with a host to be named later. Dean and Cards tonight at 5:30, and you can catch me, that's right, and Beer Makers Fan tonight on Sirius XM 6 to 7 right before lock. But till next time, have yourself a great Thursday. I'm actually out, believe it or not, for the next week. That's right, I get vacation days, and I'm going to be taking them. So it's going to be a while until you hear from me, but I got good news for you. Stevie's going to be keeping you company. And don't forget, we actually have a NASCAR Grinder Live coming up Saturday morning for that big 300K tournament on DraftKings. So Stevie's going to be on with RotoDoc at about 10:30 prior to the MLB Grinders Live show. So check that out this weekend, and he'll be covering you on the podcast all next week. For Chris, I'm Dan. Have yourself a great Thursday, and we will see you.
Thanks for listening to the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix Podcast. Don't miss an episode by subscribing to it on iTunes and Stitcher. And for up to the minute DFS news, please follow us on Twitter at Roto Grinders.